Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to 1865. This is the match report on the night that Nottingham Forest lost 3-0 at home to Manchester United in the Carabao Cup semi-final first leg. So a sound scoreline that, let's be honest, puts the dreams of Wembley to bed for this season. Forest lined up with Wayne Hennessy in goal, a back four of Serge Aurier, Renan Lodi at fullback, and Joe Worrall and Scott McKenna in the centre-half positions. In the midfield, Danilo was playing number six with Remo Freuler and Gustavo Scarpa either side. And then up front, Morgan Gibbs-White was just behind Brennan Johnson and Sam Surridge. So it wasn't quite a first-choice lineup. Baz, we talked less than a month ago about Forest losing 3-0 to Man United in a match that you'd been to. And you've just seen that happen again. But how did this one compare?
Yeah, on paper, it sounds like it's exactly the same thing. A 3-0 defeat, Forest equaliser ruled out by VAR. But while there's a lot to be worried about from tonight, I think the performance in general was very, very different. Away at Man United, we looked lost and we looked like we didn't believe that we belonged there. Whereas for periods of today's game, we matched them. Maybe we couldn't quite put the ball in the net enough, but we looked capable of playing against them.
Yeah, and before we come on to the actual events from the match, I think it's worth pointing out that after the away game in the league at Old Trafford, Steve Cooper bemoaned the lack of self-belief that the players showed on the night. And tonight he was bemoaning naivety, and neither of those are good, but there's a world of difference there, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. I thought, we'll probably come on to this later, but I thought one of the differences that really shows in the golfing class, as it were, is they had midfield players who, when you pressed them and they were under pressure, even from two players, they could, not only did they have that close control, but they had really fast thought and could then pick out a pass with it. And the away game, we didn't have anyone capable of doing that. Whereas today, I thought we had a couple of players who seemed to be able to do that. That's a thing for hope.
Yeah. We'll talk about that idea about ability and depth and so on a little bit later on. Let's start off by pointing out that in a home leg, first leg of a two-legged tie, what you want to do is you want to make sure that you keep it compact, you do the things you need to do, and therefore conceding a goal after 5 minutes really is something that will have had Steve Cooper, he'll have been really frustrated by that, won't he? And I would say it's one of those where if you're a United fan, you're saying, wow, Marcus Rashford, what a guy. He's so in form, which he is. He really never looked like he was going to miss there. But from a Forest point of view, Aurier was caught out of position. Worrall and Freuler tried to double up on Rashford, but couldn't get the ball off him. And then Hennessy was beaten at his near post. So, I say, neutrals will probably say Rashford's doing well. United fans will be really happy with the attacking play. But from a Forest point of view, Shouldn't have happened, should it?
Yeah, Aurier being out of position let it happen. I did think Hennessy could have done a lot better. But my immediate thought after the goal was, that's like watching a more elegant version of Stan Collymore.
Okay. So, I mean, it's worth pointing out, when a striker's in form, 10 goals in 10 games for Rashford now. Mm. So the fact that he was, you know, having a go at that, and the fact that he was able to kind of do it, and like there's little bobbles went in his favour, etc., etc. That's what happens when you're in form.
Yeah, it didn't look like he was really putting that much effort into it.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure he was, but it was just that shows how confident and in form he is.
Mm. Now, I think it's fair to say that having conceded after 5 minutes, the next 15 minutes were pretty hairy, weren't they, for Forest? We didn't look comfortable. It looked like, I mean, in midfield, Casemiro and Eriksen, vastly experienced players, played on the world stage, and really they were running the show for those next 15 minutes, weren't they? And there was that kind of feeling of like, we're not in this.
Yeah, and I think I said at the time, it was like, they, again, it's that word, that the golfing class, that those two in particular, they just had acres of space. Even when we were pressing them, they had hours of time to choose the right ball, and they just completely controlled the game.
Yeah, and what was interesting about that is United were sort of nominally playing a 4-2-3-1 with Casemiro and Eriksen as the deep line midfielders, but Casemiro was the one who was more or less dropping towards the defence, and Eriksen was the one who was pushing forward, and by doing that, they just created so much space for each other, no matter what was going on. Now, the thing that rescued the game at that point for Forest was a formation change. Scarpa was playing as a number 8, Froehler was playing as a number 8, and Danilo was the number 6. So Froehler was where we'd usually see Yates, and Scarpa was where we'd usually see Mangala. And I don't think either of them looked massively comfortable in that situation. No. Scarpa in particular, he looked like he always felt like he had to be looking over his shoulder, and that he felt like he didn't really know quite where to look or where he needed to be. And so the formation change came on 20 minutes, and what that did is it saw Forest go 4-2-3-1. So Froehler and Danilo formed a 2, and then Scarpa pushed a little bit ahead with Gibbs-White behind Surridge and Johnson on the right. And that 4-2-3-1 very nearly paid dividends very quickly afterwards, didn't it? Because Danilo won the ball, Gibbs-White broke with it, and Sam Surridge was on the left, Brennan Johnson was on the right. Gibbs-White elected to, I was shouting, pass it to Johnson, because it's one of those, it looked like it could have been a classic Brennan Johnson goal. But he went for Surridge on the left, and Surridge did what was, he opened up his body, he swept it in. We had the perfect angle from where we were to see how he just stroked it. The ball rolled, slight curvature on the trajectory, hit the inside of the post and in. And it was a classic Sam Surridge finish. And we were back in the game.
And, yeah, I could just remember what a great goal it was.
Yeah, really was. And then on the screens, VAR, checking offside. Now, it's a binary thing. You're offside or you're not, aren't you? And, let's put it this way. At Bournemouth, in real time, you look at it and you thought, Surridge is offside there, and he wasn't. And in this one, it didn't even cross my mind that Surridge could have been offside, even from the angle we were at, which is more or less looking along the line. Didn't even occur to me he could be offside. But sure enough, it's a matter of inches, but it's binary, isn't it? You can't really argue with that, can you?
And that's what it's there for, I guess.
Yeah, but Forrest took some belief from having made that sort of breakthrough.
Yeah.
So we saw a corner come in and Scarpa hit the ball on the rebound.
It was just a word about that, because I thought it was saved, but the rebound, it was like it was wobbling in the air and Scarpa just volleyed it straight off.
He didn't need to think about it.
Yeah, it was just a perfect volley. Apart from it didn't go in. Apart from it was a straight at the keeper. But the way he shaped for it and the way he took it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and De Gea was sort of diving and did a sort of a rabbit punch to punch it out. It's one of those where you'd say that if he had been beaten by it, it would be a soft one for him to concede. Mm. But he still had to make the save. And then Brennan Johnson, he did a Brennan Johnson run down the right hand channel. And it's one of those, it's another one of those, having scored two goals against Leicester, having created the equaliser against Bournemouth, this is back to the whole thing of like, oh, Brennan, just look up, because Danilo was herring down the left-hand channel.
Johnson had two defenders coming towards him, and Danilo was just open in acres of space.
And a square ball would have been perfect for Danilo to run onto. And in the end, Johnson took the shot, and it was an easy save for De Gea, low, wasn't it? Mm. And then Johnson had another one where he did so much the hard work. He kind of, just like Rashford had the run of the ball for his goal, Johnson had the run of the ball for this. He got past two or three defenders. And then, because we sit at the side of the pitch, we could just see, couldn't we? Just as he was about to pull the trigger, his body shape just got slightly out of shape. And he just got underneath it and then ballooned it over. And you just think, okay, that's four chances now. One was ruled out for offside. There were two comfortable saves, one off target. And we paid the price, didn't we?
Yeah. And was it Danilo that gave it away? It was, wasn't it?
It was a loose ball, yeah, from Danilo. And
I think that's something I want to come back to later, actually. But yeah, and they broke. Casemiro picked out Antony.
Yeah,
Antony had a shot at Hennessy, who parried it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wout Weghorst, who I had spent the last week taking the mickey out of my Man United supporting boss for signing, then was first to the rebound and like hit it into the roof of the net.
So it's your fault.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and that came literally on the stroke of half time. You know, there was 2 minutes stoppage time, but nothing happened in those 2 minutes. What was interesting about that is that having made such progress for 20 odd minutes after that Surridge disallowed goal, all of a sudden you could hear a pin drop in the ground, because all of a sudden it's just like, the team were deflated, the fans were deflated. How had we suddenly found ourselves 2-0 down at half time? But it was, at half time, it was somehow 2-0 to Man United.
The 1865 Match Report. You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Okay, there was no changes to either team at half time, and Forest did have a go a little bit, but I think it's fair to say that United will come away from that second half feeling they were more or less in control of the game.
Yeah.
There are a couple of moments. So Danilo had a shot which ended up being a bit of a P-roller from the edge of the box, which was a comfortable save for De Gea. The highlight from a Forest perspective was probably after Gibbs White had felt a bit wronged for being manhandled in the corner of the box, he then nicks the ball back off Casemiro due to his anger having not been given the foul. He did a little shimmy, twist and turn, hit the ball with his left foot. For all the world, it looked like it was going in.
Curling into the top corner.
And then somehow, when you'd expect it to dip, it just seemed to just balloon over the bar. So that was a bit of a gut punch as well, that it didn't go in. But then Forest started making, well, both teams started both making changes.
Both teams started making changes, but I think the important one was Danilo came off, replaced by Jack Colback.
And that was after 56 minutes.
And it's understandable. He's not played for a little while, and he's just come off after coming off a long season. And he's only been in the country for a week, so yeah, you can't expect him to play 90 minutes.
Yeah. So Danilo came off, and we'll talk about him in a little while because he is worth talking about. Just about 5 minutes later, then Scarpa came off for Lingard and Surridge came off for Dennis. And then a little while after that, I think on about just before 70 minutes, then we saw Morgan Gibbs-White go down with what's apparently a sore ankle. Not quite sure what happened there, but he was replaced by O'Brien and Nico Williams came on for Renan Lodi. And apart from the scoreline, the other thing that's history repeating is Emmanuel Dennis looked... Well, I'm not going to go as far as I did in the league match where I said he ended up being United's best player, but he almost had that moment of history repeating where he twisted and turned and then passed it straight to United to set them up on an attack.
Yeah, I think he was looking for to do like a 50-yard pass to Joe Worrall, but it just dropped short at like 30 yards and landed directly on, is it Casemiro's foot or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a beautiful pass.
Yeah, but just the wrong team. And it's that... He's not confident, is he? He's absolutely lacking confidence.
There
were
a couple of points later on in the game where he got in front of goal and you could see him hesitate before pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and he did have an effort which got blocked, and it's one of those whereby a confident striker hits it first time before the defender has a chance to close him, and he didn't. And he's taking that extra touch every single time, right from his very first touch on the pitch where he received the ball very nicely, took a man on, got past him, then did the extra touch, cut inside, lost the ball.
And there was even a couple of points where, because obviously one of his assets is his pace, and he got clear of their defenders, and then you could see him like hesitate and wonder what to do with it, and that gave them time to get back and block him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And worth pointing out as well, Martinez, the United centre-half, he was pretty much excellent throughout the game, and he Emmanuel Dennis, with this level of confidence, wasn't going to be able to take him on. Let's put it that way. Let's talk about the third goal, because it came late on, and again, it felt like a bit of a gut punch, didn't it? United had also made changes, and they'd brought on two young South American wingers, and I think it was Pelistri, was it, who got through on goal. Nico Williams came back, made a last-ditch tackle, but the ball bobbled about. Alanga, who'd come on up front, laid it off to Bruno Fernandes, who... To be honest, as far as I could tell, Fernandes had done pretty much nothing all match. And then he just had a shot from the sort of edge of the box, which he put duly into the bottom corner on the half volley. And strangely enough, like, it was 3-0, which United fans will probably go, that's a fair reflection of our dominance. But for Forest, I say, as a Forest supporter, I'm kind of going, that's harsh.
Well, I thought 2-0 at half-time was very harsh.
Yeah.
I think 3-0 at full-time is actually fair.
Okay,
because the second half was so different.
Okay, and let's talk about a couple of things to do with the match. So the first one, I've already mentioned what Steve Cooper said. He's not happy because of that naivety. Do you think he'll be pleased or not that the next match is the second leg against United, or do you think he'd prefer to have different opponents?
I think he'd prefer to do something else to get it out of the system.
And
especially as the game after that is Leeds, which is very important.
Yeah, and do you think, therefore, bearing in mind that he did, you know, apart from Gibbs-White, you'd imagine they were all planned substitutions, Danilo coming off, Scarpa coming off, Renan Lodi coming off, Jesse Lingard coming on. Do you think that he's going to play a reserve team against Old Trafford at Old Trafford against United?
I could imagine that no matter what has happened to Gibbs-White, I don't think he will play. And I can imagine that Jono probably won't play. Probably Lingard and Dennis maybe in their places.
Okay.
Just because I don't want to risk if Gibbs-White is carrying some sort of injury, then we don't want to risk it. And Jono's played pretty much every game, hasn't he? So.
Yep, okay, yeah, fair enough. Let's talk about a couple of key positions in the team. So I'm just going to briefly mention, defensively, we've discussed that defensively we weren't good enough in a lot of ways, and Steve Cooper said the same. It's one of those ones whereby McKenna didn't make big mistakes and neither did Worrell, but we look better when Bolly's there because of that, presumably just because of that Premier League experience and his ability to kind of marshal things. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's last season, Joe Worrell was like the most important presence on the pitch, whereas this season he isn't. And whether that's a confidence thing or just getting used to it or whatever, and Bolly gives us that sort of, it's not even the physical side of it, it's the mental side of it, that stability and the organisation and whatever, and that actually this is going to be all right kind of thing.
And once he learned to stop going wandering,
yes.
Like he did in his first few matches, which is something that we've talked about in the past. Okay, let's talk about goalkeepers. Tom of this podcast was particularly scathing in our group chat, and I quote, Hennessy was absolutely woeful for both of the first half goals. As we said earlier, you get beaten at your near post and striker scoring off a rebound, even if you're not getting much protection as a keeper, you're going to want to do better, aren't you?
I thought especially the first one, I mean, off a rebound, if you can't hold it, then yeah, there's only so much you can do. You're never going to be able to always push it round or whatever. But for the first one, I thought he should have at least he should have made Rashford work harder than he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I definitely think we need a keeper. It depends if Henderson's out for six more weeks or whatever. That's it.
Is it the case that Henderson is a very good number one keeper and therefore it's going to be difficult to get another keeper who's at that same standard because one of them's going to be peed off by the end of the season?
Probably, but then you could make the argument Henderson's on loan, so do you know what I mean? If you're bringing someone in.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's bringing someone in on a permanent, that is, I guess, though.
Yeah, because we've been linked with a Croatian keeper whose name I'm not even going to try and pronounce. But you'd imagine that he would want to come in and be number one. You'd also imagine that Henderson's probably got it written in somewhere that he will play if he's fit, at least in the league. So I don't know. Again, we don't know what happens with people's contracts. But yeah, it's as Tom has said, I'm not quite as harsh on Hennessy in today's game as Tom is, but yes, there's questions to be answered.
And the other thing, and we've been spoilt because we had Brees for the last couple of years and we had Hendo this year, is there's that presence thing again. Mm-hmm. Is both of them were very, very big characters and they could not just organise and yell at the defence, but they could get the crowd going as well. And that made a big difference. I thought the atmosphere today was really negative. It's not been like the rest of this season at all. It's more like Forest 5-6 years ago.
Okay. I'm not sure I'd go quite so far, but certainly, again, I will go back to what I said earlier. That second goal just before half-time completely killed it. The first goal after 5 minutes didn't help, in fairness. But yeah. Okay, let's move on to more positive things then. Danilo, you said he's young, he's from the other side of the world, he's played a full season in Brazil, he doesn't speak English.
He's only been here a week.
But he was... Okay, the trouble you've got is when you're playing number six, is it if you do give the ball away, it's likely to cost.
Well, so I thought he was our player of the match and he made our midfield match theirs for periods of the game. But when Steve Cooper talks about naivety, Danilo's equally guilty. So before the game, we were saying, actually, maybe Freuler could work as a number eight because he plays that way for Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
He plays much further forward and he's much more
Front-facing.
Driving into the box and so on. The problem, and so what Freuler does for us is play as this number six, and he barely moves. He just sits in front of the defence, and he's mainly there as eyes to cut out passes and close down passing lanes. It's not even that he makes tackles, it's just his positioning. And his,
which is why so many people go, what does he do? Because it doesn't look like he does a huge amount. But
as we've said, the best defensive midfielders are the ones you don't notice during the game.
Yeah,
Danilo playing as a number six, and why the tactical change made such a difference is he's all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
He was up the other, especially for the second goal, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He was right up the other end of the pitch, bombing into the box. And if you're the holding midfielder, the single holding midfielder, you can't do that.
Mm.
But when he had the ball, he was brilliant with it. He was good at taking the ball off other players, tackling. He was running. He had energy. And you made the point at one point that what he can do, he was under pressure from two United players, and somehow he picked out a pass to a player who was behind him. And you're like, how did he even see him?
Yeah. And that's
what I was saying earlier about that close control and being able to pick out a pass when you're under pressure. We don't have many. Morgan Gibbs-White can do it. Danilo can do it. Maybe Scarpa can do it. I've not seen enough of him yet.
Yeah, and okay, we've only seen 55 minutes of Danilo tonight, but bearing in mind that there were apparently other clubs, including Arsenal, casting admiring glances his way, I think some of them will be going, you know what, we've missed out here.
Mm.
Forrester got a good one here. Time will tell, I guess. Okay, so there were some moments there from Danilo. There were a few moments in front of goal that we really should have done better. Defensively and tactically, we were outdone by United. And the second leg is, I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but we know that we're not going to Wembley.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do, then Steve Cooper deserves a knighthood, freedom of the city, and frankly, he can marry my wife. So, anyway, we will leave it there. We will be back at the weekend with one of our monthly Forest Ramble discussions. And for what it's worth, we will have a man at Old Trafford next week. So he might feel differently about the match than he did at the time that he bought the ticket. And then normal service will be resumed in the league with the Leeds match. In the meantime, I've been Rich Ferraro. This has been the 1865 Match Report. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.